So holding on Chavzayin Amud Beis by the Mishnah near the bottom. Continuing on this topic of Shavuyos, and specifically continuing from the previous Mishnah in the printed Mishnayos, this is actually this is actually the end of the previous Mishnah about a city that was conquered by a city that was conquered by soldiers that we said all the women in there are possible unless there's places to hide out, etc. So an actual case history. Amrav Chai ben Akatsiv Hamoin Hazeh. It's a lashon shavua. The simple meaning of hamoin hazeh means he's swimming by the Beis Hamikdash. Hamoin means a place of residence, so like the Beis Hamikdash, which is the residence of the Shechina. And Marsha says that actually another possibility is he may have meant hamoin hazeh in the sense of that he's swearing by one of the heavens. We learned from Chagiga that the seven heavens, one of them is called Ma'in. Right. Anyway, he swears, Lezaza yada mitoch yadi, her hand, I mean his wife's hand, didn't leave mine, mishal shenichnetu evri chavim Yerushalayim v'adjiyatu, from when the goyim entered Yerushalayim until they left. Meaning, in other words, I can testify that she was never alone with any of the goyim. She should be mutter. Rav Chai ben Akatsiv would actually point out with a koyin. So if it were, he's arguing she should remain mutter to me. Amr loy, the Chum told him no. Ain't not a maid al asma. A person can't give aedros on himself. What the problem with it is different mefarshim.
Why he didn't?
Well, he is. He's testifying on behalf of her. But the Chachamim are telling him that doesn't work. We learned this yesterday. We learned that a person can't testify about themselves, and a husband is the same as yourself. So that's actually the Mephoshim discussed what's the problem over here. Is it because we said yesterday that a person can't give edus on themselves, and a husband and wife essentially are considered one person, or is it a matter of as negev edus that he has a vested interest in saying that she's mutter so he can stay married to her? Either way, the idea is they're telling him, very nice, you're saying that, you're even swearing, etc., but we're sorry, we can't accept that. Incidentally, though, Mepharshim point out that actually this oath that he says, Hamoin Azeh, is not really a valid Shavua Lahalacha anyway. When we learn later this year, Bez Hashem, when we learn the Sefer Nedarim, we'll learn what are the valid expressions that constitute a Neder or a Shavua or not. One of that, if you swear in Hashem's name, of course, that's a valid neder. But if you're swearing, for example, by the Beis Hamikdash or by one of the heavens or whatever, that's not necessarily a valid shavua anyway. So he's saying it more like an expression to buttress what he's saying, but not really that it would be a valid shavua anyway. The other interesting thing on this Mishnah, by the way, is what's this expression, from when the goyim entered Yerushalayim until they left? Reb Chaim and Ben Akasa lived at the time of the Churban Bayis training. What do you mean from when they entered until when they left? If we mean the goyim, if we mean the Romans who conquered Yerushalayim, they never left. Afterwards, they set up camp there and they stayed there. So actually, the Sefer Doros HaRishonim has an interesting take on it. He says that actually the goyim that we're talking about here are not the Romans at all. He quotes from Josephus that at one point one of the factions over there, one of the factions of the Biryonim who are fighting for control of Yerushalayim, at one point realizing how weak their position is, they invited in the Edomim to come into the city and help them. Those are the goyim that we're talking about in this Mishnah.
By the way, you mentioned the union of Edus and the union of Shua.
Mm-hmm.
Here you're saying it's not a Lashon of Shvur.
Well, it is a Lashon of Shvur, but it's not a really valid Shvur, yeah.
But we're not talking about Shvur, or are we talking about Shvur or Edus?
No, we're talking, no. He's saying a Shvur, but he's also giving Edus. But we're saying that his Shvur is not really a Shvur anyway, and his Edus, either because it's considered that he and his wife are the same person, effectively, or because he's Negev Adavar, either way, we can't accept his Edus. So the Tiferet Yisrael points that out. He says that he brings from a Medrash, actually, that yes, the Goyim were able to find all the Machvoyos in Yerushalayim. They were able to find even all the hidden treasures and everything. So, yeah. So no, because the point is, because we learned yesterday, if there's even one Machvoyah, if there's one hiding place, then every woman can claim that she hid there. But we're saying over here that the Goyim even found those. So the upshot of it was they forced him to separate from his wife. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, the Afal Pi Kein, even though they were also to stay together, because he's a Kohen, Yichud L'Bayis V'Chatzeirei. Reb Chaya ben Akatsiv set aside a house in his Chatzer for his wife. Uchshi Yotza, and whenever she would leave the Chatzer, when he's there, Yotza B'Rosh Baneh, she would go out first, and then her children would go out. That way there's no Yichud. Now, when they're coming in, first the children would come in, then she'd come in last. Again, so there's no issue of Yichud. Now, boy, Abaya, my loss can be grusha.
The children would have told us.
No, no, because the children are shivrim. Once you have that, they're not alone. Once the children are there also, then there's no issue of yichud. So boy, Abaya, my losses can be grusha. Are you allowed? Is a person allowed to do such a thing with a regular grusha? Rashi says we're talking about over here a koyin to have the same kind of thing. Rashi says we're talking about a koyin over here. He divorced his wife. Unlike the case of Rav Chaya over here, who didn't necessarily divorce her, he's just also to be with her alone. So he actually divorced her, where now he's also under a law to remarry her, because he's a grusha. Is he allowed to have her live in the same kotzer and just will make sure that there won't be any yichud? Or is there a problem? Maybe after all, maybe they were close together after all. They were married at one time. They know each other's mannerisms, and they know each other's winks and hints and whatever, like we learned the kind of thing that we learned in Yevamos. And therefore, there's more of a possibility that he might be over and end up having relations with her.
There's no problem, right?
So according to Rashi, it comes out that we're only talking about a Kohen over here. Other Mepharshim say that no, we might even be talking about a Yisrael over here, because even a Yisrael, he's allowed to remarry. Right, if she didn't, well,
to remarry her,
he's allowed to remarry her, but until right now they're still divorced. It would be nuts if they were to. Yeah,
it would be a problem.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Okay, but wait. Okay, no, yeah.
It's not just
the
question, is it?
Yeah, yeah, no, but that, yeah, then you could always condition it. Okay, yeah. We'll, let's continue the Gemara, and then we'll see. Yeah. The question is, do we say in our Mishnah, in the case of Reb Chaya ben Akasev, that we make her because she's a Shvuya, and the whole idea is a Shvuya is a suffix, but in the case of a Grusha, maybe not, maybe there's no difference. Tashma, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hamagarish et Ishtoi Lotinasa b'shchunasa. If a person divorces his wife, she's not allowed to remarry in his shchuna, in his neighborhood. Well, once she's remarried, she can't live in his neighborhood. Now, there we might even be talking about a Yisrael, because once she's remarried, then she's also to her first husband. Actually, the Rishonim also talk about the question. The Rosh says, what about if afterwards her second husband divorces her? It would still be the same issue because she's also under a law to her first husband. On the other hand, the Rana argues maybe not. There's a difference because actually in that case, if they were to be Mizana, I mean it's a Znus, but it wouldn't be the same law of Machzor Grushos, whereas with a Koyin, whether it's Znus or marriage, there's still the same law. Anyway. Well, but it would be if it was nus, then it would be if it was nus, not the same condition, then it would be a lesser lav, basically. It would be a lav, according to the Rama, it would be a lav of loisi yekdesha. According to the Ravid, maybe not even that. Yeah. So she's not allowed to remarry and live in his shchuna. And the definition, the definition of shchuna, we're gonna say soon. The im haya koyin, and if the ex-husband was a koyin, then even if she didn't remarry, lo tadu im b'mavui, then they're not allowed to live together in the same mavui. What do you mean? People, the normal thing we learned, in other words, she can't live in a house that opens out into a chotzer that opens out into the same mavui. And by the way, Mepharshim point out, when we say a mavui over here, we mean a mavui she'enu mefulosh. The kind that we learned about in Erevin that's closed in on three sides, a cul-de-sac, as the realtors put it. If it's a mavui mefulosh, then people are always walking through it anyway. Then there's less of an issue because people are always around. We'll get to that. Let's get back to that in a second. Tosfos quotes over here that a shchuna means three houses. Therefore, a mavui would be bigger than a shchuna. Other Rishonim learn differently. They learn that a shchuna is larger than a mavui. That what?
It can be a shchuna like Kran Heights.
Yeah, necessarily like Kran Heights. Maybe that would probably be considered a city, la halacha. But it might be like an area of a couple of mavuyos or whatever. That affects the explanation that affects the understanding of the next couple of lines of the Gemara, because the Gemara continues. Im haya kfar katan, what if it's a small village? Ze haya maisa, there was actually such a case. Va'amru, and they said kfar katan nidin kishchuna, that a small village is considered like a shchuna. No, so a small village would mean over here. So Tosfos says that a small village means people don't commonly come there. So therefore, even people aren't commonly around there. It's a small village. There's only a few people. So therefore, even if they're three houses apart, shchuna being three houses, there's still more of a chance that one of them can visit the other and have an affair without anybody else realizing it. Now again, that's according to Tosfos's explanation that a Mavri is larger than a Shchuna. A Shchuna is three houses. A Mavri would be larger than that. Hagoyes Abach has the Girsa over here, the opposite. Krakot knitted to Mavri, because there's another way of looking at it that a Shchuna is larger than a Mavri. Yeah. There's also the issue. What are we saying over here? Are we saying that we should be more strict? Are we saying that we should be more strict with a Kohen's grusha versus when she's remaining a grusha versus when she remarried? Or are we saying, or are we saying we should be less strict? One way of looking at it is, on the other hand, when she's remarried, then it's an issur d'oraisa. Not an issur d'oraisa. It's an issur d'oraisa either way. But if she's remarried, it's an issur mitzvah based in. It's an issur kares and mitzvah based in to have relations with her. Therefore, maybe we should be medical. He's going to be more. He's less likely to have an affair with her under those conditions. Maybe on the other hand, not. Maybe Tosfos says on the other hand. Tosfos is the one that says that in that case, let me rephrase that. One way of looking, Tosfos's way of looking at it is that the case where she's not yet married, but he's a Kohen, maybe he's likely to treat it more leniently. It's only a lav after all. It's not an issur mitzvah based in. Therefore, you need to make more of a separation. That's why we're saying a mavri, which is more than a shchuna, according to Tosfos. The other way of looking at it is the other way around. That no, if she's an eishes ish, she's remarried. You have to be more strict about it, because if they do end up having an affair, it's going to be an issur mitzvah based in. So therefore, with a Kohen, we may call, and just she can't be in the same mavri with a Yisrael or a Kohen. If she remarried, then they'd have to stay. She'd have to stay out of the whole shchuna, which is a larger area, again, according to them. Now the question is, mi nidchem mipnei mi? Okay, so if we're saying that the two of them can't live in the same mavri or shchuna or what have you, which one is going to have to move? Tashma, the Tanya, he nidches miponav, ein hu nidchem miponav. Braita says she has to move away because of him. He doesn't have to move away because of her. However, but if the chater was hers, meaning if she has a house, if she owns a house in that chater, who nidchem miponav? Then he gets moved away in favor of her.
What about the children?
The children is a different matter. That actually we're going to talk about, I think, later in the Masechta. There's going to be a discussion about child custody, who gets custody of the children. That's a different issue. We're not getting into that right now.
It's linked to who has to live where?
Not necessarily, no. Ordinarily, I mean, to oversimplify, it was in Rambam Gimel Pratim a day or two ago. To oversimplify, basically, boys stay with the father and girls stay with the mother, but there's more details to it than that. But we're not really getting into that right now. But the point is that if she owns a house in that chotzer, then she has the right to stay there. It's her house. So then we'll make him move. As opposed to otherwise, we'd say that she has to move. So now that's the question. What if they both own houses in the chotzer? Tashma, well, that's what the Braisa said. He needs chesukonav, that she has to move away because of him. Now we have to consider, b'maya skinan, what kind of case are we talking about if we're saying that she has to move? If the chater belongs to him, meaning he has a house there, pshita, well, then of course she'd have to move away. He's entitled to stay in his house. The ala b'chater shalah, are you talking about that the chater belongs to her? Obviously, if we're saying the default is, if we're saying that there's a case where she has to move away, namely where he owns a house. There's a case where he has to move away, namely where she owns the house. If we're saying the default is that she has to move away, obviously that must mean that both of them own houses over there. The answer is no. No. Dilma de Agumego, not necessarily. You could say that the case is, for example, both of them are renting houses in this chater. So then neither of them owns a house there. Maybe in that case you're saying she has to move.
We're not answering the question.
No, that's the thing. We're not sure. We can't be sure from this braisa who would have to move if both of them own houses in the chater. We know that if he owns one, then she has to move. We know if she owns one, he has to move. All we can derive from the braisa is if both of them are living there, but not necessarily owning. If both of them are renting houses there, let's say, then we make her cancel her lease and move out. That doesn't mean that if both of them own houses there. Yes, but not necessarily if both of them own houses. So my hat. So. We're still stuck. My Haviala, so what's the story? What's the bottom line? Tashma, come, let's prove a point from a pasuk. Hine Hashem metal talecha tal tela gover. This is behold, Hashem is going to move you around, the moving around of a man. The context is the pasuk is talking about the pasuk. It's a nevuah addressed to Shevna, Chizkiah's chief of staff. He was a great person. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin. Actually, he was a great Talmid Chacham, but he was corrupt. He was trying to betray. He was going to betray Chizkiah, the city of Yerushalayim, to Sanhedrin's army, etc. And in particular, the Navi tells him that Shevna has delusions that he thinks he's going to become a king. So he starts making himself a grave among the graves of Malchut Beis David. They found something in archaeological digs some years ago with an inscription on it. The inscription is partly broken, but they think it might be this grave that Yeshaya is criticizing him for building. Anyway, so Yeshaya tells him nothing of it is ever going to happen. You're never going to become the king. Adarabba, the Eveshter is going to throw you out of the country, and you're going to wind up dying in Golis. The expression is that Hinei Hashem metaltelecha taltela gover. But behold, Hashem is going to move you around like the moving of a man. But Amar Rav, that we learn from that, tiltula de gover, kashin miditza, for a man to move around from place to place is harder than for a woman. So therefore, other things being equal, we should make her move.
Why is it harder for men?
Akasha, that's how it is, sociologically, I guess.
What
I don't know.
Marsha says,
so in Sanhedrin, Marsha said, I don't understand, Taka, why. Maybe.
What did he say?
He says he doesn't know. Here, Marshall just refers to the Gemara and Sanhedrin. On Sanhedrin itself, he says, I don't know why the tiltle of a man should be so much harder on him than for a woman. I haven't seen any. Thank you. So the bottom line is, if both of them own or rent houses in this chatzer, then yes, we'll make her move because it's easier on her. But otherwise, if she owns a house and he doesn't, then yeah, he's gonna have to move. Turn it up on him. Going back to this business about we're saying that a husband and wife who are divorced, we said they have to live further apart from each other, so they don't have affairs with each other or whatever. So more on this topic. Lova hemena b'nichse aviyah. What if while they were married, he borrowed from her from the property that she brought in to the marriage from her father's house, the nichse malug. The nichse malug belonged to her. We've learned before he has the right to the payrus of them, but he went and borrowed some of that money from her. It doesn't have to be dafka that, but that would be the typical way that you might have that he borrowed money from his wife.
You're asking how would this affect
my... No, one second. No. So, Eina Nifras, now he divorced her, so now he has to pay her back. Eina Nifras, Elai De'achar. She can only be paid back through somebody else. They need to appoint a shliach, a go-between, because you don't want that he's going to go over and then directly give her the money, and again, that's going to create a re-relationship between them. Again, we might be talking about a Kohen, we might be talking about a Yisrael. There's a Machalkas Rishonim on that. Amar Rav Sheshet, the also a Kamon Ladina Loim is Dakekinan Lahu. As a matter of fact, actually, if this couple, this divorced couple, comes to us for a Din Torah, we're not gonna pay attention to them because we're gonna say you have no business coming to a Din Torah together. We need to keep you apart. We're going to tell them, go away. One of you has to hire an attorney or whatever, or somebody to represent you in court, and then we'll listen to you.
Maybe they can come separately.
Okay. Yeah. Rapapa says even more. We put them in cheirim if they do that.
I could expect that they would have relations. Isn't that incompatible?
Okay, but they're both together there in Beis Din. They're arguing. Okay, it's entire enough still, but there's still an inappropriate closeness between them. You know. Especially, I mean, what happens after the entire is asking, you know, yeah. How many John Grisham novels do you have about, you know, the opposing counsel from the two sides or afterwards then, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Rapapa, I'm a Shemusim Shamtinin. Rapapa says we actually put them in Chayrim if they do that. If they both come to Beis Din together, not only do we say we're not going to hear your case, we put them in Chayrim for doing that. Rav Huna Bredi Yeshua, I'm a Negudi Nami Minagdinin. Not only that, we even give them Malkus for doing that. And again, are we talking about only Davka? Are we talking about a Koyan and his divorced wife, or are we talking even Yisrael? That's another issue.
We're not talking about
any
here.
No, we're talking about they're already divorced. But the
only divorced.
Yeah.
Not remarried.
No, not necessarily remarried, right. In the case of a Kohen, it doesn't matter whether she's remarried or not, right.
Well,
yeah.
It's accepted.
Yeah. However, Amar Rav Nachman, Tana be'Evo Rabasi, we learn in Evo Rabasi, which is better known as Masechta Smachos. It's one of the Masechta Tanis, it's printed in the back of the Gemara Seder Nezikin. When is this talking about if she was divorced after they were married? They were fully married, so they've been living together, they had relations, etc. So now, even they're divorced, there's a certain closeness, there may redevelop a certain closeness between them, and therefore we're afraid that it'll lead to inappropriate behavior. But if she was divorced from Erosin, then she can be paid on her own, and then they can go to a dintura against each other. Because then they're not so comfortable around each other. Then there's less of a concern that them just seeing each other in Beis Din is going to, you know, as they say, rekindle the old flame.
Even after 10, 20 years or whatever?
What kind of 10, 20 years? Erosin in those days usually lasted
a
year.
No, there's Kedushin if they divorced after.
No, but it doesn't matter. That's the point. In other words, once there was Nisuin, then already there's a closeness between them. Which, by the way, I mean, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, we learned in the first parak that in Yehuda, the minhag was that an Oros and Arus would be in Yehud together, and sometimes they'd even have relations. So obviously we're talking about not in Yehuda. Umar tells us a case, how Oros v'Arusase de Otsu v'Kamei Rava. One time an Oros and Arusa who were divorced came to Rava for a din Torah. Yosef Rav Adab Amasna Kamei, and Rav Adab Amasna is sitting there in front of him as a Talmud. So Rava set up a go-between between them. He didn't want to hear the din Torah between them themselves, so he set up a go-between. Why? Didn't we just say that in Masechta Smachos it says that if they're divorced mid Erusin, there's no problem? So Rava tells him, because in this case, we can see that this Arus and Arusa are very friendly with each other. We see that they recognize each other's hints and winks and whatever. So Gaisi means that they're comfortable around each other. But yes, here, even though there was Erusin and never Nisuin, we can see already that they've developed that closeness that a married couple usually has. Doesn't matter. Apparently, it doesn't matter. I mean, Rashi says we're talking about a kohen over here, so it doesn't really matter. Or Ikadamri, a different version. Loi uku Rava shliach ben tayu. According to the second version, Rava, when this Oros and Arusa came, did not set up a go-between. He figured, fine, there were Oros and Arusa. There's no problem. Amalei Rav Adab Amasna neku mar shluch ben tayu. Said Rav Adab. According to this version, Rav Adab Amasna said. According to this version, it's the other way around. Rava did not set up the go-between. And Rav Adab Amasna says to him, Nekum mar shlucha ben tayu, why don't you set up a go-between? Amalei v'amar Rav Nachman tano b'eva rab sikhula. And Rava tells him you shouldn't need to, based on what Rav Nachman says. Amalei, and according to this version, it's Rav Adab Amasna telling Rava, rather than according to the other version, according to the first version, it was the other way around. Rava telling Rav Adab Amasna, Hani mili hechad le gaisi b'hadadi. That rule of Rav Nachman only applies when we see that they're not comfortable around each other. Here we can see these two are comfortable around each other, therefore we should set up the go-between anyway. And that's back to the halacha, that if you have a particular Orus and Arusa who we see are very friendly with each other, then you still need the go-between, even if it's only been Erusin. To repay a debt, or for a dintura or whatever. Incidentally, there are certain exceptions for this. For example, there's a medrash in Bereishis Rabbah that tells a story of how somebody gave tzedakah to his ex-wife on the grant of sarcholotis alam, which includes the idea that a person has to help out his ex-wife. And in the schos of that, when there was a drought and rain fell, in the schos of that, giving tzedakah to his ex-wife, but that's a different case. But you need tzedakah, that's different. But otherwise,
you bring them together.
Apparently not. Presumably she was a Pnoyada, I don't think the matter says. Could be, but even so, you know. Maybe. Her second husband could still be poor, but okay.
It has to be done with a Shia?
No, according to no, because that case was actually, he brought it directly to her. Okay, but they were said Tzedakah obviously is different.
Why is
it not
different than
Machmanus?
There's a question about Shachmanus.
So what, a divorced husband giving his ex-wife shalach manas, or vice versa? I mean, that's different. The shalach manas is meant to bring people together. That's the whole idea behind shalach manas is to create more avodah. Exactly. So then that might be more of an issue. That might be a different issue than tzedakah. But matanos levyonim, for example, that's different.
But raising shalach manas, right? Matanos levyonim is like tzedakah.
Yeah, so that's what we're saying. So based on that medrash, it's there. Mishnah says, since we were talking about cases when we do and don't accept Edim, who usually would be possible to give Edus, we mentioned 2 Mishnayos ago that even an Eved Reshivcha can give Edus on a woman who is a Shvuya. So here we have a similar concept of cases where we accept Edus from somebody who usually would be possible to give Edus. The Elu Ne'mon and Lahoyd Begoydlan Masharov Bekoytnan. In the following cases, we believe a person to give Edus when he's older about what he saw when he was younger, before Bar Mitzvah. Number one, Nemon Adam Loimer, we believe a person to say Zek Savyoda Shal Abba, this is my father's handwriting on a shtar, as an aid, that is, Zek Savyoda Shal Rebbe, this is my Rebbe's handwriting, Zek Savyoda Shal Achi, this is my brother's handwriting. We believe, even if he only saw the handwriting when they were little, let's say his father or brother or whoever died when he was little, he can still give Eidus on it when he's older. Another example, Zochra Yisi Befoinis Shiyatza Behinum of Rosh Parua. He can say, I remember when I was a little kid that such and such a woman went out to her wedding wearing a Hinuma. We learned at the beginning of the parak that Hinuma is either a veil or a chuppah made out of hadassim, a Rosh Parua, and that her hair was uncovered, which we learned at the beginning of the parak are signs that she was a psula when she got married. So if he remembers there was a wedding from when he was a little kid, then we believe him on that when he's older. Another example, also we believe him if he says that I remember that so-and-so used to leave school to go tovel and eat truma, as we learned about the case with Yochanan Echochalos the other day. Or we believe him to say that this person used to receive a portion of truma together with us in the granary. So the person himself was giving the edus in a koyin. When he was a little boy, he used to go to receive a portion of truma. He's giving edus on somebody else that he was also there. We also believe him to say that this place is a base of pras. And on our base, Tosus points, a base of pras we've learned about before is a place where there was a grave in this area, and then somebody went and plowed up the field. So Midrabanan, we're concerned that the bones have gotten scattered about 100 amas in each direction. Now, Tosus points out on Ahmed Bey's, if we don't have a chazakah about the place that it's a base of pras, we don't believe, of course, to say that he remembers from when he was a little kid that it is. We don't believe him to give it a status of tumma where it didn't have it up until now. We're saying the other way around. If he's saying like this, the kever is here, 100 amos reaches until here, but he says, I remember from when I was a kid that from this point and on we consider it to be tahor. So then we believe him.
Provided there was a chazaka to begin with.
So originally the place was known to be a base of prach. He's reducing the size of it basically. Or Vad Kano Yudaboyin Bashabas. Or we also believe him to say that I remember when I was a little kid, this is how far we used to walk on Shabbos. Here's the Tchum Shabbos of the city. Abel in Adam Neman Lima, but we don't believe a person to say when he's older that he remembers from when he was younger, Derechayu Leplaini Bebakamazer, that so and so had a path in this place. That Reuben has a field over here, Shimon has a field over here. So Shimon may have had a right of way through Reuben's field, a path that he had a chazak on. If now, over the years, the path has gotten lost, we don't believe somebody to say, I remember when I was a little kid that Reuben used to walk on this path. An easement, yeah. Or Maimud or Misbud, Hayul Pliny, Ramachamazah, or similarly, if he says that Pliny used to have a place in this field where he set up to make a hesped for members of his family when they died, or Maimud or Moshe, the standing and sitting where the Avelim would sit 7 times and they'd say, and they'd say various trilas and sukkim, and then be Menachem Oval. Again, that's kind of an easement. We also don't believe him about that. Nobody gave him the edus. They saw.
Would we believe him while they were kids?
No, that of course not. No, that's for sure not when they're kids. We're talking about that Tosfos points that out over here, that even in things that are banon, when do we believe a kid something that he's able to do himself? For example, b'dikas chametz. We learned in Pesachim that we'll believe a child to say that this house has been checked for chametz, because v'yadai, all these things are not v'yadai. So there's no question we won't believe him as a kid. But once he's grown up, since these things are d'rabbanon, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara, then yes, we'll believe him. So the Gemara goes, Amar Avonu B'rei D'Rishua, v'hu shi'esh gadol imai. This is when do we believe him as far as the Eidos on the Shtar, when there's an adult with him. In other words, because you need two Eidim to be Mekayim Shtar. So you have one other person who was an adult at the time and recognizes the signature, and then this person who was a kid and now is an adult can be the second one. And the Gemara points out, a tzricha. We needed the mission of the
kids that have grown up.
No. Two kids that have grown up would not be good at the point. Yeah. Yeah. What tzricha? The Gemara points out, we need all the kids. The mission had mentioned three cases. He says, my father's, my rebbe's, or my brother's. We need all three. D'yesh mean an aviv. If we had only been told his father's signature, we would say, you know why we believe in Mishum B'Shechekabe. He's always around him, so he learns to recognize his father's handwriting. Our rabbi, loy, but his rebbe, maybe not. He doesn't recognize his handwriting so well. V'yesh mean an rabbi. Conversely, if it only said the rebbe, you would say, Mishum D'Isla Emsa the rabbi. You know why we believe him on the signature of his rebbe? Because he fears him. Which the Rashash explains means, in other words, that basically, if he were to say, this is my Rebbe's signature, his Rebbe might well come to Beis Din and say, it's not, so you're lying. So he would be afraid to lie about that.
That's
why we believe him, yeah. No, we're talking about that they're Eidim on the Shtar. We're not talking about if the writing we're talking about is the Malver or the Loiver, that's a whole other issue. Then we wouldn't leave him. But here we're talking about that they're Eidim.
There are
Eidim. One of the Eidim on the Shtar is his father or his Rebbe or whatever, yeah. The Yeshmin and Hanitauti, if we had the father and the Rebbe, we would say we believe him in those cases. Aviv d'shchiach b'beiv rabbi d'islaim, say, then fine. His father, he's always around. His Rebbe, he has Eidim for. Aval achiv d'lesle leha v'leha, but his brother, he is not necessarily always around, and he doesn't have any particular fear of him. Eidim alo, you might think not. Kamash malon, that's the chiddush of mentioning the brother, that even that is good. What's the reason? Kivin to kiyum shtaras midrabanan, because since the whole concept of validating why we allow him to give this aid is because since the whole concept of kiyum shtaras is only drabanan, because we said before, we learned before, previously in the parak, midaraisa, once aidim are signed on the shtar, it's good enough, we don't need anything further, it's only midrabanan that we sometimes need to validate the signatures, then heimnu, midrabanan, so the rabanan can believe him on something which is only required drabanan anyway. Next case, Zohar Hayisi B'Ploinis Shiyotza B'Hinum of Rosh HaParua. We say that we believe him to testify that a certain woman was married as a Basula. My timer. Now, why is that? Lahora, because of that, money is going to be taken from the husband and given to her. How can you believe him on that? The reason is given to Roiv Noshim Basulas Nisais, because since most women are married as Basulas, Gili Milsa Ba'almahu. It's not really Eidos. It's more like giving out the facts. Confirming something that we already have a very high assumption. Yeah, that is the case. Yeah. Next, Vishalya Ishpoin Yosim to say for Litbro Lachal Truma. We say that we believe him to say that so and so used to leave school to go in Tovil and eat Truma. The question is, how does that help? Vaduma Eved Koyin. How does that help if you say he went to eat Truma? Maybe he's eating Truma because he's an Eved of a Koyin.
No,
we haven't yet gotten to the granary. Here we're talking about that he used to go eat truma.
Therefore, he should be permitted to eat truma.
So we're talking about over here. Well, no, that's the question. We're assuming that when he's saying this Eidos, it means he's trying to say this guy is a Kohen.
That's the point.
But how can that be? What if his Eidos amounts to that the guy's an Evan? And Tosfos points out the issue is not so much that you might consider him a Kohen Miyuchas. We learned the other day that there's Makloikas with a Malin Mitruma Liyuchsin, and certainly not from Truma Dirabanan, which the Gemara is going to say on Amud Beis, based on this guy's Eidos, all we allow this person to eat from now on is Truma Dirabanan. That's not the issue. The issue is that if it was because he was an Eved, what happens? He gets freed. He might continue to take Truma, and he's not supposed to. He's a Zohar at that point.
We know that. So.
That's the issue. In other words, when we say Viduma Eved Koyanu, the question is not that if he's saying he's a Koyan and really he's an Eved, that we might mistakenly think him a Koyan Miyuchas. No, because we're not going to think him a Koyan Miyuchas based on this Eidos anyway. You need two Eidim to consider him a Koyan Miyuchas anyhow.
They
might be freed and still continue to eat Shroma Dirabana, and that's the issue. The answer is Messiah the Rabbi Shurban Levi. In fact, this Mishnah then supports what Rabbi Shurban Levi says. Dama Rabbi Shurban Levi, also la Adam Shi'alamidus Abbe Torah. A person is not allowed to teach his slave Torah. So if he's saying they took him out of school, automatically means he wasn't an Eved. question is, Valoi, really? Why not?
But, otherwise you wouldn't have been in school.
Right. Vahatanya, we learn in a braita, lova himenu rabba, if an eved's master borrows money from him, usually an eved doesn't own anything of his own, but it's possible for him to, so if the master borrows money from him, or his master made him an apotropos, a trustee, a manager over his property, or the eved put on tefillin in front of his master, so he lay in three psukim or more in shul, he got an aliyah, in other words. In all those cases, we don't say that he's considered a free slave. We don't say that the master wouldn't have allowed him to do these things unless he was already freed. No, we say that, he did one of those things. He's not supposed to. Usually, avadim don't put on tefillin, and usually you don't appoint an eved and a surplus and so forth. But if he did, that's not proof enough that he was freed. So we see, therefore, that an eved could well be laning in shul, which means he obviously learned Torah, and you're saying it's not proof he's still an Eved, so obviously you were able to teach him Torah. The answer is, Hosn the Ikri Eved Midaita. Yes, but that case is talking about that the Eved read from the Torah on his own. Ki kamrin and dekanoi goi minag bonin. We're talking about over here that when we say you're not allowed to teach you Eved Torah, it means when you're treating him like a son and sending him to school. If he learns on his own, okay, he learns on his own. You can't help that. But you don't send him to school and treat him like a son, because then people are going to end up thinking that he is a ben chorin, that he is a free person, when really he's not. He's an eved. And the Mishnah said litzbar lecha b'truma. We said that the child who's now an adult is giving aid of that so and so he's tovah on b'truma. What are we talking about? B'truma d'rabbanan. That we're talking about that now, based on this edus, will allow this person to eat truma d'rabbanan, not truma d'araisa. For that, you need a higher standard of proof.
If it was d'araisa, then they would deduct.
Then you can't believe somebody who was a child. Where the whole point we're saying is, when can we believe this child, now adult, is in things d'rabbanan? Therefore,
yes.
So he's saying edus that the person was eating truma d'araisa, maybe. But that, without further evidence, we can't allow this person to eat truma d'araisa. The best we can do is allow him to eat truma d'rabbanan. Then we said, v'shaliach cholik imanu al agoda. He says that this person used to get a share of truma together with us at the granary. Again, the question is, v'duma eved koyin hu. What if he's an eved of a koyin? You have the same problem. The answer is, nan kamanda oma, ein chokin truma l'eved, elim ken rabba imo. In fact, our Mishnah goes according to the opinion that, which is the opinion of Rabbi Huda, that you don't give truma to an eved in the granary unless his master is with him. The Tanya, as we learned in Braisa, we learned in Yuvamos a couple of months ago about that you had a case where the wife of a Kohen and her Shifcha were in a hiding place and they both gave birth, and we don't know whose baby is whose. So the children are growing up. We don't know which one is the Kohen and which one is the eved. So one of the dinim we said over there is one of the dinim we said over there is what happens when they want to go to the granary to get truma. Do both of them have to go together, or is it good enough if one goes by himself? So the Tanya, ein chokin truma la'eved elim ken rabba yimo, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says you can't give truma to an eved unless his master is with him, which means therefore in this case of the two mixed up kids, both of them are going to have to go together. That way, b'monafshach, one of them is a kohen, one of them is his eved, and that way you're covered. Rabbi Yossi says, no, one of them can go by himself, because he can say, look, I'm a Kohen, I'm entitled on my own, and if I'm an Eved of a Kohen, then give me, because my master is entitled to Truma, and I'm entitled to eat it, because of him.
That every time he
goes. No, not necessarily, but the point is that he has that argument to make, and therefore he should be able to get Truma on his own. Now, so then our Mishnah, if our Mishnah is saying that somebody is giving edus that somebody used to go to the granary to get truma, that has to be according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yossi. That wouldn't work, because according to Rabbi Yossi, yes, he might be an Eved. And what if now he's freed? We learned in that Mishnah that when they get older, they should free each other, because that way they'll both be able to get married. Okay. So, then you can't do that.
Why would Rabbi Yehuda authorize that?
Rabbi Yehuda, because, what do you mean, why would Rabbi Yehuda authorize that? Rabbi Yehuda is saying that, no, you have to have both of them there together. Therefore, if an Eved comes by himself, you don't give him truma. What's the reason? The reason for the difference. In Rabbi Huda's place, they used to hold that if you see somebody eating truma, then that's enough evidence to declare him a kohen miyuchas. We learned this the other day. Whereas in Rabbi Yossi's city, they didn't. So therefore, so Rabbi Huda is concerned if you see the guy getting truma and eating it. If you see the guy getting truma, then people are going to think he's a kohen miyuchas because that's enough evidence for that. And if he's an eved, you can't do that. According to W.A.C., you can't do that anyway. Even if you see him getting truma, is no proof. So therefore, fine. Let the Eved go ahead and get truma on his own. Tanya, we learn in a braisa. Amar Rav Elazar Rav Yosi, mi yomei lehi ad. We learned this in Yevamos also. Mi yomei lehi adti. In all my life, I never gave eders, except pamachas hei adti. One time, I gave eders. The halo eved lekohuna al pi, and they brought up an eved and declared him a kohen based on my eders. Halo sakadai. What do you mean? They actually brought him up to be a kohen. Hashta, don't isn't there the famous thing? Even the animals of tzaddikim, Hashem doesn't cause something bad to happen to them. The famous story that was Pinchas ben Yair's donkey that wouldn't eat grain that wasn't meiser or that was stolen or whatever. Tzaddikim asma like kol shekhen. How much more so with tzaddikim? How is it possible that a tzaddik like a Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi, caused people to be misled and caused an eved to be incorrectly considered a kohen? Ella, no. Bikshu lahalos eved lekohen al pi. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yosi is saying they were going to declare this guy a kohen on my eders, except that in the end the other agent came and therefore was quashed. What happened? What was his mistake? Chaza ba'astri de Rabbi Yosi. He saw this person receiving truma or eating it in Rabbi Yosi's city. Where in Rabbi Yosi's city, we said they had no problem with the Eved going and getting the Truma on his own, because either way, he's entitled to it. But although Asid bastard Rabbi Yehuda, but he went and gave the Eidos in Rabbi Yehuda's city, where in Rabbi Yehuda's city, the rule was that you don't do that, and therefore that Malin the Truma the Yuchsin, that once you see a person eating Truma, so what happened? He gave Eidos in Rabbi Yehuda's city. I saw this person going to the granary and getting Truma. And therefore, they thought on that basis, that must mean he's a Kohen, until they clarified the matter. By the way, so they allowed him to testify. We're trying to figure out, the Beis Din in Rabbi Yehuda's city is trying to figure out, is this person a Kohen? Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yosi came with his eders. So they not necessarily, maybe, I don't know. Could be. And the truth is, the Girsa is different in a few places anyway. In Yevamos, we had the Girsa, I think, was Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, and the Yerushalmi has a Girsa Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yosi, so it's a little uncertain who it was exactly. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Tzadik, actually, that's who it was in Yevamos. Anyway. So he gave the Eidus, and they accepted the Eidus without realizing that without thinking to ask in which city it happened. But then afterwards, either other Eidim came, or they thought to clarify it afterwards, whatever, and they figured it out, because it wouldn't be right that through a tzaddik like Rabbi Elazar that such an inappropriate thing should happen. Tosfos, by the way, in Yevamos, the Merdama's tale over here, holds that we don't have to be goyis that part in the Gemara, because Tosfos, in a few places in Shas, says this thing about Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mevi Tekol Al Yodam is talking about Hashem doesn't cause it, that tzaddikim should eat something that's aser. Because we learn in Tanya, and we learn in Perek Zayin of Tanya, that whatever a person eats becomes Dama Basa Kibsara, and therefore a person eats from Shalosh Klippas Atmeh, something from Shalosh Klippas Atmeh, something that's aser, then it has a very serious effect on their body. So therefore, it would be a gnai. It would be a very embarrassing thing for a tzaddik to eat something that's osur. Whereas here, we're not talking about the tzaddik himself eating something that's osur. It's just something else. So Tosfos holds that may not have been a problem. If it happened, okay, it happens. Even tzaddik can make mistakes. Next, we said in the Mishnah of Shamakam as a Beis HaPras, who? That we believe this child, now adult, to say this place is a Beis HaPras, meaning that the Beis HaPras goes until here, but not further. My timer, Beis HaPras, the Rabbanan, because the whole concept of Beis HaPras is only the Rabbanan. Midaraisa, we figure that the bones have probably been broken up enough that none of them are the size to be metame. The minimum size for a piece of bone to be metame is kisa'ura, the size of a grain of barley. The Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, because we see that Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, Menapeach Adam Beis HaPras V'Holech, if a person has to walk through a Beis HaPras and stay Tahar, specifically if he's going to bring a Korban Pesach, we look at some Sachim, he can blow as he's walking through the Beis HaPras and keep on walking. So in other words, he goes slowly through the Beis HaPras, step by step. He as he's going, he blows on the ground. He says maybe he uses a tube too, because otherwise he's going to have to crawl on his hands and knees. And as he's blowing, that way, if there's any bones over there, he'll see them. And if there's any bones that are still covered by dirt, as he's blowing on the sand, as he's going, that way, if there's any bones over there, he'll notice them and know not to touch them. If there's any bones still hidden in the dirt, that's no problem. They're not metame unless he touches them or carries them. You need larger amounts of bone to be metame ba'oil.
If it's in the sand,
there's no problem.
Covered by sand?
Covered by sand, yeah, then it's no problem, as long as he doesn't touch it or move it. If it was a whole, if it was a whole skeleton or a large part of a skeleton, a skull, a spinal cord, or if there was a kazayas of flesh or whatever, then it would be metamic oil as well,
right,
by him passing over it. But here you don't have any of that, so it would be small pieces. Yeah. You blow as you go along. Yeah. But the point is that we allow that kula. We allow that kula for a person to be able to go bring a carbon pesach and not consider him tummy. So we see the whole this minapeach. So we see the whole concept of the rabbanim. And similarly, another din, Rabbi Yehuda ba Ami Mishmei de Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Beis HaPras Shenidash Tar. If a Beis HaPras was trampled, a lot of people or animals or whatever walked through it, then it's tar. My time. So it's considered tar after that.
Because
the
bones go in?
No, because my time. Because inevitably, if so many people or animals have trampled through this space of pras, inevitably any piece of bone that was there has been crushed into small, in a piece smaller than a kasaura, and then it's not matame at all anymore. So we see, you wouldn't allow these kulas if the thing was daraisa. We see from that the whole concept of a base of pras is only dirabanan.
But wouldn't they avoid, if they see a skull, they would avoid it after?
That's the point. In other words, when you're walking through a base of pras, if you see a skull, you'll know to avoid it. But if there was a tiny piece of bone, you might not notice it. You might step on it.
No, but these people
who trampled it,
they would try to avoid it.
Yeah, no, we're not talking about it. The whole problem is that the whole problem why we have a base of pras in the first place is we're concerned after the field was plowed, you now have little pieces, little fragments of bone scattered all over the place. Once Shinidash, once the whole field has been trampled on, then any of those pieces that might be there have already been crushed into powder. Trampled by people, by animals, whatever. So that any pieces that are there would have been crushed into powder, and there's no problem anymore. Then we say in the mission of Ad Kano Yin Boni B'Shabbos that we believe a child to say that we used to walk up till this point on Shabbos. Why Kasavah Tchum in Dirabanan? Our mission holds that the whole concept of a Tchum Shabbos is only Dirabanan. Or at least there's actually a machlokus. The Rambam holds that the tchum of 12 mil is deraisa, but the 2,000 is derabanan. Whatever. Here we're talking about the 2,000 amma one, so that would be derabanan. However, but we said we don't believe him to say that Pliny had an easement in this place, such as a road or a place for Maimon and Moshe. My time, I put him a money on because we can't actually take money from one person and give it to another based on the address of somebody who was a cotton at the time. We believe a child to say as follows. And here there's a machloikus. Do we mean, unlike the cases in the Mishnah, where we said for sure it means that he has to be an adult now, in this braisa, are we talking about the person is still a child, or are we talking about, again, that he's a child, now adult? Anyway, we believe him to say, kach amali abba, my father told me, mishpacha zu tahora, mishpacha zu tmeya. Such and such a family is tahor, and such a family is tamei. You don't talk about Tahar and Tomei when you come to families. Ella, what do we mean is Mishpachazu Ksheira or Mishpachazu Psula? Now, what are we talking about over here? The Ran discusses the question, are we talking about that there was no, the Ravid holds even, that we're talking about there was no chashash on this family up until now. Now this person comes and says that his father told him there's a problem with his family. Doesn't it automatically mean we declare them puzzled? But it means at least now we have a chash. Now we have reason to be suspicious.
That's as a gadol, he comes for a cotton.
That's I'm saying that's a different machlokas. Whether we're talking about he's still a cotton now, I believe the Ravid says that even if he's still a cotton now. Yeah. The Ran says, and he says, and he explains Rambam to say this also, that no. What we mean is, we're talking about over here, we're talking about that we already had reason to suspect. We knew that in this family, there's many branches of this family. We know that one branch of this family there's a problem with. We weren't sure up until now which one. Now the kid comes and tells us, it's not the Goldsteins from Crown Street, it's the Goldsteins from Montgomery Street. So then we'll believe him on that basis. But if we didn't have up until now, if we had no reason to think that any of the Goldsteins is a problem at all, then we wouldn't pay attention to him.
Based on the chance testimony, we would not allow
daughter to marry a Cohen.
No, so that's what we're saying. According to the Ravid, it would mean that at this point there's suspicion and they shouldn't be marrying Kohenim. According to the Ran, if there was already, now this helps clarify which branch of the family is it that has the problem, and that's the one that now we're not going to allow to. Yeah. What?
My father told me, I witnessed something not kosher about this family.
That's the child.
He's a child. I don't know that we'd necessarily believe it.
No, I wouldn't believe it.
Well, wait. We have another thing, actually. Also, a child can give edus that we ate by the ksatza that was done when the daughter of Pliny married Pliny. What is the ksatza? We'll talk about in the last couple of lines of the parak. We at this point we may get to it tomorrow. We'll see. Also, also, we believe him to say that we used to bring challah and matonis, meaning matnes kohuna, the zroi l'chayayim v'keva, to so-and-so who's a kohen, and therefore we believe him to say that this person is a kohen. All of this, what? Not for Yochsin necessarily, but at least as far as Truma the Rabbanan, yeah. All of this is only if he himself says that he did it. I myself used to bring this truma or challah or what have you. Not that he's saying my friend used to do it. Because about himself, he knows to be more exact about it. But with his friend, he can't be sure who he brought it to exactly yet. But in all these cases, if this person, instead of a child who grew up, if instead he was a guy who became a ger, Eved v'nishtachra, or a slave who was freed, ain't them on him, then we don't believe him to give edus on what they saw when they were goyim or avadim.
So after the conversion?
No, before. This guy, for example, this goy or this eved, for example, a person had shechted an animal, he had zroi l'chayayim v'keva, he sent it with this goy or with this eved to a kayin. Now, when this person became a ger or meshuchro, he wants to give edus that person is actually a kohen. That we don't accept.
But after the conversion,
Of course, then he's a yisrael like anybody else. Yeah.
So what's the chiddush for you?
That's right. But as we said in the Mishnah, we don't believe a child to say that so and so had a path through this field or maimed or misbed. Rabbi Yechon and Breka Eimer Nemonim. Rabbi Yechon and Breka says we do believe him. Question is, Rabbi Yechon and Breka Aheya. Which part is Rabbi Yechon and Breka referring to? Ilei Ma'aseifa. Is he talking about the last part? Apokim Amoinahu. That's for sure. You can't believe a cotton now gadol to take money from one person and give it to another. Ela Areisha. No, he's referring to the Reisha. When we said that we said a goy or an eved, we can't believe him to testify now after the geirus about what they saw beforehand. Rabbi Yechon and Breka even nemonim. But Ma'ikum l'figi, what's the underlying machlokas? Tanakama saw came into Eved Chachavim who will I have a dayak. The Tanakama figures since he was a goy or an eved, he wasn't necessarily careful to notice the exact details. Rabbi Yechon and Breka saw came to dayti le'igyuri since he intends to be megayer.
What's the difference? He was not before a ger.
Since he intends to be Magaya, major kavadayak. He's careful already from when he knows that he's going to become a ger. He's already careful to look at things. We know, by the way, the famous vart about gershon is geyer. We talk about in Yavamas that the deeper meaning why we always say gershon is geyer, because a ger is born already with a neshama that predisposes him to becoming a ger. That fits very well with our Gemara over here, that this person, even before he actually became a ger, he already had a certain tendency to it, and therefore we assume that he's careful to check on these things. My ktsatsa, the tonen abanon, ketsad ktsatsa, what is a ktsatsa? If you have one brother in a family marries a woman who is inappropriate for him, so he's a Kohen marrying a Grusha, or is he Yisrael marrying a Mamzeres, or what have you, the other members of his family come, they bring a barrel full of fruit, they break it in the middle of the street or in the middle of the square, and they announce, Achenu Beis Yisrael Shmo, listen, our brothers Beis Yisrael. Our brother Pliny has married a woman who's not supposed to be married to. We're afraid that his children are going to be mixed in with ours. Meaning, either they're saying we're afraid that eventually this will be forgotten and our children will intermarry with his, or they mean people are going to eventually forget. They're going to know that, again, they're going to know that one Goldstein married somebody he wasn't supposed to, and later on they're going to mix up and which Goldstein it was, and they're going to think all of us are possible. We're making this public macha that everybody should remember. Everybody take for yourselves a sample of it and remember for generations, that his children should not be mixed in with ours, should not be mixed up with ours. So Marsha points out, why would they use a barrel of fruit? Because kids love fruit. So like this, you would have a lot of kids come there and take some of the fruit. And that way they'd remember for a long time to come.
Kids understand what they're saying?
Apparently. Yeah, apparently.
Well, from what we said previously, that
they don't have to know the exact psul. They just have to know there was some kind of psul.
That goes without Gemara.
Yeah. So therefore, this is the ktsatsa that a child is able to give edus on. Because it's something very memorable. Yeah. So why, by the way, do we call it a ktsatsa? The Yerushalmi uses an expression because he's nixed, he's cut off from his family. They're declaring that branch of the family is now cut off. Don't mix them up with ours. There are a couple of other explanations. Marshall says the reason we call it a ktsatsa is Meloshon ktsats. We break the barrel. Marshall says the vort is a low down person is called a low down man is called a kotzut, like os kotzut ben kotzut, same as piyut for parsha zachar. Therefore, a woman who is low down and improper is called a ktsatsa.
Yeah, kotzut ben kotzut.
By the way, the Medrash mentions at the end of the Medrash on Rus mentions that they used to do this kind of ktsatsa thing also if a person sold his property to a goy. They would also make a public spectacle. They'd also make a public spectacle of it to announce that he did something very wrong.
But you cannot sell a property to a goy.
You're not supposed to, but if he did, then if he did.
Rescind.
No, they're not necessarily based in rescind it. But yeah. And besides, we might be talking about Chutz Laaretz also. And by the way, the Medrash mentions one more thing, that if the man ended up divorcing this Ish She'ena Hegenes, or the person ended up buying back the property from the guy, then they would do an unkatsa, then they would break another barrel in public and make an announcement that the person has done shuvah. Okay, you can't, but you try to make as much publicity of it as possible. Yeah, provided there's no shuvah, obviously. Yeah, okay, but, yeah. Hadron Alacha Ish She'ena Samala.